You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
Kamala is the first ever head of inclusive content for the Lionsgate Motion Picture Group, where she develops and embeds DEI strategies into the studio's key creative, marketing, and business decisions to reflect the globally diverse audience in the film slate. Attaining her BA and MBA at Harvard, she has led marketing campaigns at companies from Bad Boy Records to NBC, Google, and Facebook. She is an outspoken voice on issues of race, pinning Medium articles and LinkedIn blogs on racism in corporate America, and hosting and creating the podcast From Woke to Work, The Anti-Racist Journey, geared at moving people from woke feelings to clear, effective actions that advance racial justice.
You can sit with us podcast with Lexi B.
So where are your people from? Before we get started, let's find out a little bit more about Mama and Papa Kamala. Where are y'all from?
Yeah, so my family's from Jamaica. I was actually born there. So I tell people I'm from Jamaica, the island, not the part of Queens. But I grew up in Jamaica, Queens, not the island, for the most part. I was in Jamaica until I was four. My parents are from kind of like the more rural part of Jamaica. Then after like they went to undergrad, they moved to Kingston and lived in the city. Both of them are kind of like the probably most educated for sure of their siblings. They had like advantages and privileges, to, you know, somewhat based on, yeah, for my mom, it was more based on birth order. She was like on the younger end. So her older siblings were the ones that helped out on the farm and like all that good stuff. And my dad like had an aunt in particular that really took an interest in like his academic life. And so they moved to the U.S. When my dad was on a Fulbright scholarship. He's an economist. And my mom's an accountant. And then we grew up, we were in New York. So we were in the Bronx, then we went to Queens. So I consider myself a New Yorker by way of Jamaica.
So we're talking about oxtails and rice and peas and festival.
That's correct. We're mostly talking about, for me, my favorite, saltfish.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Dumpling, banana.
Yes.
All that good stuff. Breadfruit. Like
fried plantain.
Breakfast, I think that's right.
Mm.
Except yes. We call it plantains.
Plantains, yes. I'm sorry. Let me get my Jamaican on plantains.
Exactly.
Yes. I love it. I love it. So you do a lot of things. You are a layered woman, a layered Black woman in the best way. And you have been in a lot of rooms, whether it's entertainment, whether it's music, whether it's social media.
Yeah.
And now whether it's making movies, literally. And so you are also known as a person who's not afraid to be themselves, even if that others may receive that as negative. Others may receive that as off-putting. And so my question to you, the topic we're going to talk about is authenticity. And what are the goods and bads of being authentic in corporate spaces?
Why did you say there's any bad? It's so easy, Lexi, especially as a Black woman. Everyone wants me to bring 100% of my full self every day. I feel welcome. I mean, they love us. Have you not heard?
All the time. All the time.
The more I am myself, the more they love me.
I'm sure you get paid more by being 100% yourself all the time.
The truth is we all know that like it's not easy, but at the same time, it would be so much harder to do anything.
To get started on this topic, tell me how you define the word or the phrase be your authentic self. Because I feel like we say that a lot, especially in the corporate world. Like this whole word authenticity is like bell bottoms in the 70s. Everyone's like, we want you to be your authentic self. And then when people get into safe spaces, people are like, don't do that. Bring a picture of your dog.
Right.
But like, don't do all of it.
Right.
How do you define what bringing your authentic self into any space is? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think sometimes people equate authenticity with like, you have to be the same exact person in every single setting, right? And I think that that is true to a certain extent, but it also is kind of misleading. All of us have multiple sides to us, right? Like, I think that, you know, for instance, like, you know, how I am when I'm hanging out with my best friends is different than how I am when I was hanging out with my Jamaican grandmothers when they were still alive, or how I am when I'm hanging with my Jamaican aunts or with my parents, right? And I wouldn't say that one of those versions of me is more authentic than the other. They're both me, right? But I do think that there is a consistency in both of those settings. I'm going to speak my mind and people are going to know how I feel. but I might speak my mind differently in different settings for the purpose of being effective, right? And for the purpose of understanding like what the space is and like what is possible in it. And so for me, being authentic is to have a certain consistent part of yourself that always shows up the same, but is able to be adaptable to what the environment is for the purpose of making sure that you are heard. Because for me, authenticity is not just about speaking. I don't just want to speak, I want to be heard. So in order to be heard, I might have to speak in different ways and different settings in order to make sure that that core authentic truth is coming through and is actually being received.
I appreciate you using the example of your family and your friends, because I always use that example to define code switching. I think the term code switching has been kidnapped in racist settings to be defined as aligning yourself to whiteness. And I always tell people, while that is true, that that kidnapping did happen, the actual definition of code switching is how you are with your mom is probably and hopefully a little bit different than how you are with your boo, which is probably and hopefully a little bit different than how you are with your boss. I would at least hope so, right? And like you said, in order to not only be listened to, but heard and received to get what you want. When did you, let's start early on in your career, when did you realize the true definition of authenticity and the power that you can wield it if you understand how to do it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it definitely started very early. And part of it is that as an immigrant, like being born in Jamaica, having parents that were raised in Jamaica and who came to the U.S. as adults, they had experienced an upbringing and a childhood and a young adulthood where they were in a majority Black space, right? And then they came to the U.S. and things were different very obviously, very quickly, right? And I think that they just were talking about what they were experiencing. And so from a young age, I was hearing that. And I had a lot of feelings about my parents as educated, accomplished professionals being treated certain kind of ways in white corporate and white academic spaces. And I think now that I'm just looking back on it, like part of it may have been a certain level of like indignance that I had, where I was like, this needs to be spoken on. This shouldn't just be a conversation that like me and my parents are having, or conversations that happen in all Black rooms where we're all like nodding and amening, but like situations are not changing. And so I think like as I got into more of those types of spaces, whether it was in college, going to a predominantly white institution, and then in the working world, like I realized that I was not the type of person who was going to really easily be able to like go along to get along. Like when something was unfair, when something was unjust, when something was racist, when something just ignored us and our perspective, I spoke out about it. But also I had always been raised in a space where I was taught that my voice mattered. And I saw how using my voice changed things. Like, it's kind of funny. So as I said, I went to a predominantly white college. I went to Harvard. And in your, they have a couple of giant survey classes that might have like 500, 600, 800, 1200 people, right? A lot of classes are smaller, but some of the big intro to economics and like things like that. So there was one very popular class that was called like justice. And it's basically like moral reasoning, all kinds of like interesting philosophical debates and discussions. And it's day one, freshman year. I'm in this giant 1,000-person class. The professor asks a question. And most people are just kind of like either deer in the headlights or like, there's no way I'm going to be speaking first. And I raise my hand without even thinking about it. I didn't even think about it. I didn't even hesitate, right? And it's funny now that when I still go back to my reunions, like people would be like, come on, wait. You're the girl, you're the freshman who spoke first in like justice, right? And it's so interesting how those types of memories and those types of experiences really do linger for people. And I think that I just realized that, like, when I spoke, people would actually listen. And so it was worth using my voice and learning more and more when I stumbled or when maybe it wasn't received the way that I thought it would be. How can I be more adaptable to make sure that I continue using, you know, this gift that I have? And I don't even mean the gift of communication, though that's part of it, but also this gift of, like, confidence and a certain fearlessness. I never want to lose that. So even when it doesn't go exactly the way that I want in my career, I'm constantly trying to hone and refine that because I never want to stop speaking up.
So I heard a few things that I want to recap. One, I heard that even as young as 4 years old, you knew something was off. Like, the fact that you were such a young child and could recognize, maybe not 100% verbalize because you were a kid, but really recognize and take in the discrepancies and differences of how your parents were being treated versus other people. You know, I always tell people, kids be knowing, okay? Kids be knowing. And I think that needs to be highlighted because I do think people need to understand that the behavior that you exude in front of a child really can positively and or negatively affect them for the rest of their life, even though they may not be verbalizing it to you. The second thing I heard was that you went to Harvard. As I famously tell people, I went to the Harvard of California, but I remember visiting Harvard. And Kamala, that is one of the whitest spaces I have ever experienced in my entire life. And maybe I should do an episode on Boston because it just blew me away. And as a kid whose family's from the South, I always tell people, I'm like, it's one thing to be in Alabama. It's another to be in Boston. And I can only imagine being a Black body in a school like Harvard or Wellesley or Tufts or Boston U. And then on top of it, speaking up in a 1,000-person justice class because it's white Harvard. And that's wild to me. I don't know if I should be scared of you or compliment you or maybe a little bit of both. I don't know.
You know, I'm so grateful for the fact that, like, the way that I was raised, like, when I showed up, it was my Harvard. Mm. I never thought that it was their Harvard. Mm. Like, I dreamed of going there.
I love that.
And when I got in and I went.
Yep.
And, like, I was like, I'm going to take up space here.
Take up all the space.
I'm going to, like, experience it. I'm going to be a part of it.
Yes.
The professor has a question. I got an answer. I'm going to try to have one. Like, I just, so it's so funny to hear it called White Harvard because obviously it was, but also, like, it wasn't. Mm. And I do think that, like, you can translate that to any space, especially corporate spaces.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's so easy to feel like this is their company. This is not my company. So therefore, who am I to fill in the blank, whatever it is that you're talking yourself out of doing, whatever it is, the point that you have to make that you're deciding you're not going to make because, like, whatever, it's not my company, right? Like, who cares about what I think? And I just found, one, I never considered that as an option, but as I think about it as an option, like, it is one of the ways that I think we rob ourselves of, like, really, one, of organizations getting the full benefit of what we have to offer, and two, of us getting the full benefit of what they have to offer, right? It's a mutual exchange of value, and I have to also be extracting value. I have to also be learning and growing and doing all those other things, and just, like, you know, at the organization that we met at that we will not discuss, I will remember that one of the first things that I saw there in terms of, like, those times companies have a lot of mantras and, like, some are true, some are not true, but, like, you know, the spirit of them, act like an owner, not a renter, is such an interesting one because to me it made sense immediately. And then I kind of realized that, like, I think that's how I've moved through most spaces for better or worse. Like, I'm here now. Therefore, I am a part of it. I am supposed to be a part of it. I'm supposed to contribute to it. That's just kind of my expectations.
I love that your personality, that's how you walk into the room with. As you speak about that, I'm kind of self-analyzing myself. And I feel like, at least in the corporate world, when I started my career, I walked in quiet. And then within 6 months, realized, wait a minute. So I'm going to get in trouble regardless if I don't show up as myself or if I do. I remember my first year out of college, girl, I was on a PIP within 9 months. And I found that so intriguing because I was like, I worked so hard to be like you. And I'm about to get fired. And I remember the day after the PIP, I just walked in, girl, skated in the company like, well, now like you've just given me the clear to do exactly what I want to do and say exactly how I want to do it professionally and twerk the way that I want to twerk, because regardless, you're going to have an issue with me. So if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go down with me. And it was interesting to me how when that attitude shift changed, how my whole career changed.
Interesting. Say more. Like, what do you mean?
When that attitude shift, I started realizing the people that were in my corner of all different races and faces and the people that weren't because of how I was acting. And for the record, I strongly believe that everyone is entitled to their opinion and everyone's entitled to their emotion. I am not here to erase your emotion. I'm also not here to conform to what you want me to be. And so when I started being more of my professional self, instead of being in the corner, I realized very quickly that I could find the people that could help me shape that professional authenticity even better and make me better. And then as I started to become better faster, I had more power in the room.
I love that, though.
That when I started being my professional self, I started building relationships, mentors, sponsors, because not everybody's going to like you, but there are a whole lot of people who will.
Say that again. Like, you know, come on.
And that's okay, right? But I feel like, especially as an adult, the sooner you can pick the people who like me versus the people who don't, and you focus on the people that are going to ride for you, and you allow those people to love on you and give you feedback and check you and make you better, the easier life's going to be. And that, for the record, is for professional and personal and your love life.
I agree with that so much. I was actually just having this conversation with someone because I think that, like, part of what, because I had a very similar experience where throughout my entire career, I've always had like sponsors and advocates, and I've always had detractors, right? And if I decided to take feedback from the detractors, right, I would be twisting myself into a pretzel, trying to be the thing that they're saying that I should be. And the truth is that, like, they're never going to transform from detractor to sponsor. That's not a path, right? So even if I do all of the things that they say they want me to do, I will never be the person that is on the top of their list to mention in the rooms that I'm not in, right? And so when you show up authentically, when I show up authentically as who I am, like, it attracts certain people, it repels other people, and that's okay, because the people that it attracts are the people who are going to speak your name in the rooms that you're not in. Because they see you, they see something in you that is worth investing in, which then creates a positive feedback loop where you continue to lean in even more to who you are, which is an affirming cycle. I mean, even if we assumed that the other path was possible, where you might be able to, like, please your detractors by becoming less and less and less of yourself, even if that were successful, it wouldn't be successful because it wouldn't feel good.
You know, yeah. I just think that at this, you know, the older I get, I'm just like, I'm not trying to be liked by everybody.
No, I'm not Beyonce. Not a great
And for the record, I know that sounds horrible, but I'm not.
But also, when you realize that even Beyonce is not everyone's cup of tea, I'm like, well, let me just chill.
And I really feel like she's laughing to the bank.
Yeah.
Or one of her many mansions. So if she's cool with it, I guess I can be cool with it.
I mean, it can be, you know, we're being funny, but it can be challenging for people especially, you know, women of color.
Oh, yes.
To internalize that because, and also to discern what we talked about at the beginning, which is sort of like, what's the difference between like authenticity as we're defining it and authenticity like as defined as like, I'm going to show up as 100% of my casual self in every professional setting. And if y'all don't like it, you like, that's not what we're talking about at all. And some people really can't distinguish that. But then also like there is a deep need to be liked and to please people that does live inside of most people. And how do you manage that and make sure that doesn't manage you? And then I think thirdly, how do you actually take feedback? Because who you take it from is so important. I think that like, I am not perfect, right? Therefore, there are lots of elements of like further development that would benefit. But if I decide to not be discerning about whom I take feedback from, I'm going to be twisted up again into a pretzel, trying to please a group of people that really are not for me. I kind of feel like you can kind of tell some of my litmus tests for like, because I think a question would be like, well, how do I know which people, which, you know, whose feedback I should be leaning into? I think one is that like, it has to be someone that you think genuinely does see your strengths as strengths. So the things that you think are your strengths, if they're kind of like, well, you need to be, for me, it would be like, you need to speak up less. You need to read the room and make sure you're not ruffling feathers. I would be very allergic to that feedback because I know that those are the things that have helped me to be successful thus far. Versus someone who's like, I love how outspoken and passionate you are. I think that like you might need to work on like maybe some different ways of framing it, ways of like gathering like some support before you go into the room on the tougher conversations, ways of understanding sort of like what's the, is this the right time? Maybe you should pull this person one-on-one. Maybe you should do this. Maybe you should do that. It's like, oh, that's someone that sees my gifts as gifts and wants to help me use them better versus someone who wants to like dim your light. And I think you can kind of get a sense for that.
Can I add one to that? I also love getting feedback from people that whatever the feedback they're giving me, they do well at.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have been in situations where people have tried to give me feedback on something and I just sit there and I, you know, I listen. And in my head, I'm just like, but you do horrible at that. And a lot of people will do that.
Yeah.
Because also the older I get, I've become much better at, as you said, discerning the feedback. And there have been many times where I have received and taken feedback from people that I'll be frank, on this topic, I would never take their feedback.
Mm.
But on this other topic, I'm like, well, actually, you are kind of good at that.
Right.
So I'm not saying that I like you, but if you're going to take the 5 minutes to try to give me a tip on how to be better at this thing,
I love that.
Which takes, it's a really hard skill.
Yeah.
It's a really hard skill.
Yeah.
Tell me more about this authentic thing. Like you said, we have people that sometimes sway it a little bit too much and it's all about the balance.
Yeah. I mean, I think like you have to have, in my opinion, like North Stars that are just true for you. For me, one is like issues of racial justice, social justice, inclusion, etc., are just like, those are bedrock foundational issues for me. I can't ever be in any setting where something is happening that is related to those areas. And I am expected to ignore it, not mention it, deny it. That type of code switching, I don't do. Like that would feel very inauthentic to me.
So that's your boundary. That's just a hard pass. I got it. Okay.
So, and I think that like when it comes to authenticity, you have to have those clear boundaries, those clear values. Like, what are the standards that you hold yourself to? I think another is like integrity. To me, being authentic is having a high level of integrity where like I speak the truth. I am consistent from room to room when it comes to a work setting. I'm not going to say in one meeting, I really loved this project, and then get to the next meeting and be like, actually, it was kind of bad. I just like wanted to like save Facebook. Like those type of people really scare me because it lets me know that I can only trust what you're saying to a certain extent because I have seen you lie. I have seen you be two-faced. I have seen you not be genuine, right? And for me, that is a bright line. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that, like, because I'm being authentic, right? If I'm in a meeting with a filmmaker or an executive and there's a project that I don't like or that I have issues with, I'm going to, like, read them the riot act. I'm going to be so aggressive and really forceful about how much I don't like it and everything that's wrong with it and how dare you, like, because that actually wouldn't be authentic for me. Because I'm also the type of person that is trying to be kind to people. I try to be respectful. I try to, like, put myself in their perspective. I try to be thoughtful. I try to understand I'm not the audience for everything. You know, if something is offensive, I will tell them, here's the reasons why I think this is problematic. Because then again, that's a bright line. We're talking racial injustice, lack of inclusion, et cetera. I'm going to speak on that. But it doesn't mean that you have to be unaware of sort of, like, other people and of, like, the bigger picture and certain settings. And so I just think that, like, to me, being authentic has to go hand in hand with also being discerning and being thoughtful and being, like, strategic for the purpose of being effective.
So it sounds like your authenticity is not about the what, it's about the how. What I hear you say is I can walk in a room with a filmmaker or an executive and they can say, what did you think about this script? Or what did you think about this scene? And you can sit there and, you know, in imagination head Kamala be like, that ain't gonna work.
Right.
But how in which you convey that, it's the how, right? Capitalizing the how in which you convey that, you can tell the person that you weren't the biggest fan without them leaving and thinking Kamala's the evil witch of the West. Is that what I hear?
Yeah. Yeah. Because I do think that, I mean, especially in the work that I do, but I think that as Black women and as women of color who are still in many cases like one of few, like our voice in the room is so powerful and so important. Doing things that mean I'm not invited to the next meeting actually isn't helpful to me or to anyone else. When you're trying to have difficult conversations with people, you have to find ways to make them want to continue sitting at the table with you. But that doesn't mean that you therefore never have a tough conversation. It doesn't mean that you don't actually say, this is a problem. This isn't going to work. I don't think that this is the right way to go. There are ways to do that. That to me allow me to go home every day and look in the mirror and look at my son and look at my family and feel like I was authentic, but still allow me to come in the next day and be invited to the next meeting. Because when I'm not invited, then the feedback is never going to show up.
I love that you said that, because the more that I think about this during this conversation, I agree with you. It really is about how to use your voice strategically.
Mm-hmm.
You can say whatever you want at work.
That's right.
But how in which you say it will decide mm-hmm. the next step. And I wanted to ask you, what was the moment that you had to learn that? And in corporate spaces, in professional spaces, what was the day where you were like, Kamala, we need to learn this?
I think I learn it again and again. I don't think that it is something that, like, to a certain extent, like, you learn it and you kind of know it, but you also, like, it is an ever evolving skill. So like a somewhat recent example that's coming to mind was like several years ago now, but when I was just kind of starting in this role, and as I said, like, this was a role that had not existed before, right? And the point of the role was to help the studio build a more diverse and inclusive film slate. That, just as a remit, no one's going to oppose that, right? They're like, that sounds great, right? But in actuality, part of what it means is that therefore I have to tell people when we are doing things that will not build a diverse and inclusive slate. I might have to tell people, I don't think you should do this. This will not build a diverse and inclusive slate. I would like to stop you from doing this, right? And like, I'll have the authority to stop anyone from doing anything, right? I can advise, I can guide, like, at the end of the day, like, I'm not the chairperson of the studio, right? I'm a partner. I'm a collaborator. I'm a senior exec. I'm a part of the sort of quorum that is building this slate in partnership with our filmmakers, our executives, all the rest of it, right? And so there was a meeting very early in my tenure here where there was a project that I read And we were going to discuss whether or not to invest in it. And I thought this project was riddled with tropes and stereotypes. So many. And had, like, I think a challenging director attached to it as well. Because I was like, well, I'm here to help everyone figure out how to make a diverse and inclusive film slate. So when we go into the meeting, I'm just going to tell them.
This ain't it. But like, and you know, the professional Kamala way, like this may not be for us. Yes.
But like I had page notes. I had like all the things, right? And like, this part is exploitative to this community. This is a stereotype. This is a trope, blah, blah, blah. Like, and after I finished, there was like, for a couple seconds, like silence, because they were not expecting that that's what it would look like. And there was an executive in there who, to his credit, had been working on this project for quite a while. This meeting was one of potentially the last steps to getting the full company. Like,
so he was emotionally invested in his baby. So
he had been doing, working on this, right?
Yes.
And I remember, so like, I was definitely aware of in the moment, like, oh, I kind of brought the conversation to a halt for a second there. And then, you know, people started talking again, and there were some people who were like, oh, thank God. Like, I actually think the same thing. And then there were also other people who were just like, I didn't even notice that, but this sounds like something we should be aware of. And then after that meeting, someone who is now like a mentor, I consider like to be a mentor at the company, was like, Kamala, everything you said was spot on. For this executive, pulling them aside before the meeting to tell them, this is what I'm going to say, would be so helpful. And I was able to go to that executive and say, like, I'm new. I really didn't understand the dynamics, especially when it comes to creative feedback. If you have a laundry list of problems, it is important to go to the person who's been developing it and give them at least a heads up, if not a forum for discussion about what are the things that might still be able to change. How can you work with them? And the guy was like, I agreed with all of your feedback, but I was a little bit in that moment kind of stunned because I was like on the back foot. Now I have a great relationship with that executive. And I really appreciated someone who was like, message, correct. Approach, can we tweak that to be more effective? Because you're not trying to make enemies. I wasn't trying, like, I can't make progress if I don't bring those executives along. So someone could say that first version, that was authentic, but it wasn't informed in a certain way. It wasn't strategic. Every meeting after, I always brought my full POV. I always shared what the key problems were, but I created systems for making sure that like creative executives weren't going to be stunned, because at the end of the day, they are the ones that have to sit with the filmmakers and either tell them it's a yes or it's a no, or it's a yes on these conditions. They have to understand it. They have to be bought in. They have to see how it's going to be a better story. And so I think I continue to learn those lessons again and again.
But also, I would like to honor the fact that after you received that feedback, you went straight to that human.
Yeah.
To have a very human conversation,
yeah,
which we do need to highlight to recognize the bridge.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think that that's sometimes, at least what I've seen in corporate spaces, can get people in trouble a lot, where it's like, okay, I won't do that again, but you do need to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
You do need to go back to the person and kind of give the, number one, apologize, give the olive branch, however you would like to do it in your most authentic way, but making it clear that like, you have heard, you have learned, and how can we move forward?
Yeah, because I mean, at the end of the day, this is very much a team sport, as I think most things that we're trying to accomplish in corporate America are. And so I have to build advocates, not even just for me personally, but advocates for the work, because it's hard work. I've sat in those rooms with filmmakers where, I mean, forget the exact, like, it is the filmmaker's baby.
It is, yeah.
And to tell someone, like, your baby needs a little help.
Your baby ugly. Your baby ugly. Your baby doesn't even need anything. Like, yeah. Kamala, all God's creatures are pretty in theory, but this specific one is not.
No. If you put your baby out there, it's going to feel even worse when you have a bunch of strangers telling you that, like, oh, maybe this baby wasn't quite ready. So let me be your partner and your friend and your supporter in helping you make the version of the movie that's going to be most likely to be received the way you wanted it to be received.
So my last question for you, because we could go on and on with this for hours, is it sounds like to me that one of your superpowers as well is the fact that you know exactly who you are.
Yeah.
And always that can be changing and evolving. I do believe that understanding you, you will do till the day that you die.
Yeah.
But it sounds like that Kamala is aware of her value, also aware of her personal values, right? Like how you want to walk in the world. You even said integrity, diversity, inclusion, equity are very much invalued in you, even if you're not working on that specifically. And I'm sure there are other things. My question to you is, what advice do you give to our listeners about how for them to navigate who they are, or at least try to understand who they are? I don't want to speak for you, but I get the impression that little Kamala at 3 years old on the, you know, the plane to America probably knew who she was. Like, I just, my spirit says this was ingrained in you at a small age.
Yeah.
And shout out to Mama and Papa Kamala to who grew that. But, you know, when we have these new college grads, we have these 22, 25-year-olds in the workplace, what advice do you give them to go on that journey so they can better then show up professionally, authentically themselves?
That's a great question. I mean, I think sometimes, and to a certain extent, you got to take it back to basics. I think for all of us, there are certain people that we feel like know us really, really well. And so when we're feeling lost and we're not sure who we are, or we're feeling like corporate America is getting us twisted and like I'm getting all this feedback and I don't know what's good feedback, what's bad feedback. Who am I? Am I mean? Am I aggressive? Am I intimidating? Am I all the things that we hear? I think you got to take it back to basics and like go and sit with some of your people that you trust, whether it's like your mentors, your friends, former bosses that you have great relationships with, parents, like, and just sometimes like I've done the thing where like I'll ask people like, what are the three words you think of when you think of me? And I think it's really nice to be able to get that reflection of yourself reflected back at you by people that you trust to kind of give you a little bit of a boost in confidence, because the people who love and care about you for reasons, because like you are a person of value and there are specific things that they probably value for you, some of which will be affirming of things that you kind of thought were your strengths and, you know, what you were good at. You just have that affirmed. And some may be surprising where you're like, oh, I talked to five people and like four of them use this same word, which I would have never thought that I was. Maybe like this is how people are experiencing me, right? And then you can start to like let that inform and let that affirm you in a certain way. I also think being really clear about sort of like what are your own values, what are your own boundaries, is I think it's okay to not be, as we said, everybody's flavor, not be everybody's cup of tea. What are the things that if I have to lose these three things to be everybody's cup of tea, then I guess I'm just not going to be. It's like, if I have to be silent on certain issues, I'm not going to be able to be effective, or I wouldn't want to stay there. If integrity is not valued, if someone's asking me, it's one thing, I see other people are living without integrity. But if I'm put in a situation where like I have to, as an agent of the company, do something that I think like lacks integrity, I'm probably going to start looking. And I think that finding those bright lines for yourself that you can kind of like hold and protect yourself in, because so much is happening and contexts are changing and industries are evolving and different roles in people and companies and cultures do sometimes require different things from you. We have to be constantly growing and changing. But I think if you don't have a core, some things that you just know about yourself, that's when you feel more sort of like tossed to and fro, adrift, out to sea, that then impacts how you show up. And generally is not going to make you as effective.
And it also sounds like that core is that one stream between the work,
yes,
your aunties, your lover, yes, your kid, right? Even though all these different groups of people take you in differently, that core should be that foundational ribbon.
I agree. Right. And so going back to our like beginning question, like to me, that is the definition of authenticity. Because if you can ask people that you went to school with, that you work with, that are in your family, give me 3 to 5 adjectives you think of when you think of me, or like describe my communication style or whatever it is. If you can get consistent themes across all of those areas, even though you yourself know that like, but how I talk to my aunt is not how I talk to my coworkers, but they're all saying she is going to tell you the truth, even if you don't want to hear it. Then it's like, okay, I'm a truth teller, right? I might say it differently if this aunt is asking me, or if this filmmaker is asking me, or if my boss is asking me, but all, them all being able to say this person tells the truth means that, like, I don't really shapeshift who I am in a way that is diluting the truth. And potentially I am willing to say things that might make people just slightly uncomfortable, which I am okay with.
Girl, me too. On that note, me too. I am okay with. Because my dad told me all I have to do is stay black and die in that order. So I am okay with it. Kamala, thank you so much for being here. Thank you so much for holding space and being the authentic queen that you've always been, that I've known you to be.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this platform and this space that you've cultivated and have been cultivating. I will give you your flowers, which is that you have been consistent in this work for such a long time. And you embody a value that I have, which is each one teach one. And when you find something that works, share it. And when you get a seat at the table, find ways to create additional seats at the table. Don't hoard the things that are working for you. Share them so that we can have more and more company in rooms. So I think it's super amazing. And it's always great to be able to just reflect a little bit in life or just like barreling forward. So I love these conversations when you get a chance to actually like, huh, yes, I do see certain themes. Thank you for giving me a chance.
My life does make sense. It does.
Because if I'm making decisions that make a little bit of sense.
I love it. Well, have a great day, sis.
Thank you so much. It's so good to see you.
You can listen to You Can Sit With Us episodes on Spotify. For more information, visit our website, lexib.com, and our LinkedIn account at LexiB. And make sure to follow our podcasts on Instagram at sitwithlexiB. And don't forget to subscribe to our Spotify channel.